So recently, 2020 has taken us for a spin when it came to police brutality and rights for Black and Brown people. This is Asian Room correspondent Erica Diggs for the Media Sanctuary, and today I am speaking with David Banks. He is a visiting assistant professor on geography and planning at University of Albany, SUNY, member of Democratic Socialists of America, and he is going to tell us why it is important to defund the police, amongst other things. Please welcome my guest, David Banks. How are you doing today?
Good. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. You know, let's just get right to it. So why should we defund the police and freeze the hiring process?
I'm going to give you some Troy numbers. I bet significantly less money than the money we're about to talk about, that it's the same case, a very similar situation in just about every city in the United States. All right. The Troy Police Department gets 28% of our budget. Right. So the $75.8 million budget that the mayor proposed for 2021, $41.6 million goes directly to the police department. That does not include 911 services. That does not include fire protection. That does not include traffic, parking fines and fees. None of that is included in that $41.6 million. And top it all off, that $41.6 million reflects a more than $700,000 increase from 2020. So we're throwing more money at the police department. And I would take Republicans in the city at their word that crime is going up, mm-hmm. right? I think if it were any other government agency, right, we would look at it and say, okay, well, if the point of the police department is to reduce or prevent crime and crime is going up, what are they doing with a third of our money, right?
Right.
And so we have to start thinking more fundamentally, more critically about how we prevent crime, help communities heal after crime has been committed, and just generally, you know, make Troy a safer, better place to live. The first half, because, you know, there's only so much money in the city, right? The first half is taking some money away from the police. Part that gets me excited, actually, is then the where does it go? And it can go to lots of really important stuff.
Definitely. Okay, so, you know, I've recently seen something about demilitarizing the police. What would it entail for us to do that? And honestly, do you think that's such a completely good idea? And if so, why?
So this is another really good question, right? Because it's complicated because, you know, in the United States, we have a Second Amendment. People have a lot of guns. And you do have to think about, well, if the part of the government that is tasked with upholding laws, do they need to like outgun, you know, the citizenry, right? You know, like that's one thing to think about. There's no straightforward answer to that. The other part of it, though, is that, you know, this is kind of an arms race and someone has to make the first step. And I think it would be fair for police to do that in some respects, or at least we have to start changing the conversation around what policing looks like, right? And so, for example, one thing that we at Troy DSA really want to focus on is the 1033 program. And what that is it's a federal program that basically acts as like the Big Lots of military gear, right? So the federal government buys a bunch of, you know, MRAPs, Hummers, utility trucks, guns, vests, all the whole nine yards, right? And whatever the military doesn't use, they sell to police departments at severely reduced costs. And sometimes, you know, like some slightly used stuff also gets sent to the offered to police departments at deep discounts. And right now, Troy PD, we're not completely sure what they've procured through the 1033 program. It might not be much of anything, but they do see them walking around Troy in army fatigues.
Indeed.
With really big guns. And it, you know, sometimes I can't say that that's never warranted, but you know, it does say something about, you know, what you think about the people you're policing if you walk around like an occupying army.
Indeed. It seems as if they're scared of the community.
At best scared. At worst, you know, there is, I would say, that comes off as there are people that are to be protected, and then there are people that they are protecting those people from, right? Some people are the subjects of police violence, and some people are benefactors of police violence. That's a dynamic that I don't think can last.
I want to touch upon that because I recently did see trucks in Troy twice. Actually, at that, I was somewhere around Lansingburg, and then recently I was right before Lansingburg, and I seen a truck. I was walking, and I seen big old army trucks, and I'm military brat, so I know what they look like instantly. What is that? I was like, what are they doing here? And they're scaring the community.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, these trucks and gear are meant to be scary, right? Because yeah. It's for war, right? And part of war is at least scaring or humiliating your enemy, right? And showing a big, you know, shock and awe force. And that's what these, you know, this material does. And if you want to talk about, you know, making the community heal or having a better relationship with the community that's policed, that I don't see these things as working together at all.
Why do you think the police department keeps getting away with such destructive behaviors?
I mean, frankly, it's because there's no consequences for that bad behavior, right? So I'll give you a really disturbing example, right? So way back in 2010, mm-hmm. Four officers were sued by a man named James Foley. Foley was assaulted by four police officers, Christopher Polly, Charles Castle, Joseph McNall, and George Anderson. They punctured his right lung. They fractured his left ankle, among several other injuries. And Foley sued. And I believe we settled for an undisclosed amount of money, but it, you know, if it's anything like the ones that were disclosed, it's in the high five figures, right? Mm-hmm. $60,000 to $80,000, something like that, right? And that's your tax dollars, right? At least paying for the insurance plan that that cities usually take out, expecting this to happen, right? So part of this is like, you know, the whole system expects this to happen. There isn't something going wrong. This is business as usual. And what's business as usual in the Troy Police Department is that three of those four officers are not only still on the force, they've gotten raises, right? So Polly makes over $77,000 a year, and so does McNall. And Castle is making a little over $67,000. These are all public. This is as of 2019, so they could be making more. And this is all public record, right? That they make this much money, and that is their job, right? Is at least to be insulated from the consequences of puncturing someone's lung and fracturing their ankle. In 2013, the Times Union's Ken Crow wrote that Foley's attorneys had, quote, in their possession, scores of complaints of misconduct against Troy police officers that were ignored, not investigated, or whitewashed by superiors who are deliberately indifferent to the rights of citizens they are hired to protect. That was Foley's attorneys stating that way back in 2013, and nothing has changed.
Remember Patrick McManning covering up that murder that happened? I want to say a couple years ago, I believe it was 2016. What are your thoughts on that?
It's business as usual again. It pains me to say that, right, this is bipartisan, right? Republicans and Democrats do this. The cover-up of Edson Thevenin's murder by Randall French, I think it's a cover-up of a murder. I don't think it's much more complicated than that. There are reports stating that everything that the police department is saying happened did not happen, but the city of Troy does not want to see those released. As a Troy DSA, we have filed a FOIL request, a Freedom of Information Law request, to get these reports, specifically the Rinaldi memo that was supposed to reveal why Sergeant French's actions were justified. That report is still secret. And mm-hmm. even after, I think we've asked for them four times, in addition to all the officers' disciplinary records, we've asked for all of these four times. And each time the city's council has said that they're just not ready to hand those over. And with the case of the Rinaldi memo, actually, they have declined it, citing attorney privilege, that this is a work from an attorney and therefore is not subject to the FOIL request.
To me, that says, you know, they have a lot to cover up and a lot to hide. If you don't want to give out records, what's stopping you?
Yeah, they at least don't have a good answer to that accusation.
All right. So how would we as a community go about holding the Troy police accountable for misdeeds?
So we have a couple options, right? We can, one big one is that we need to have a civilian review board that has some teeth to it, right? Has the ability to, for example, subpoena witnesses and officers to bring them in front of a board, compel them to tell the truth under pain of perjury, and get to the bottom of like some really serious, disturbing events that have never been sufficiently studied or investigated. So that needs to happen. And I think that includes something that, that isn't institutional, it's more cultural, right? We need to start recognizing that the police department is just another part of city government, and that we should really consider it, frankly, something close to corruption, that our city council president is the aunt of the Police Benevolent Association president. Carmela Montello, mm-hmm. her nephew is Nicholas Laviano, the Troy Police Department's PBA president. That's, how can you ever expect her to hold them accountable?
Right.
If they're literally family.
It's a lot like that. Even where I'm from, because I'm not originally from the capital region, but where I'm from, you know, everyone in the police department is literally related. So mm-hmm. if something was to happen, I'm pretty sure things like that happen all the time in my city as well. I just don't hear about it.
Yeah. There's plenty of stuff that we just haven't heard about. And, you know, in Troy, there's you know, the case of Dominic Comitale, who, as far as I know, the only officer that has been so publicly disinterested in ethics or the rule of law that they finally allowed him to resign. They didn't fire him. They allowed him to resign. His family is known all over North Central as, you know, a particularly dangerous and disturbing family of police officers, is from what I heard. I'm not alleging that, but I've heard that.
Right. Okay, folks. Well, this is part one of a two-part segment with Mr. David Banks. He is a visiting assistant professor of geography and planning at the University of Albany and a member of the Democratic Socialists of America. Thank you so much, David. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. And this has been HM correspondent Erica Dulcinea Diggs for the Media Sanctuary. And once again, I spoke with David Banks. Thank you so much.
Thank you.